Hi, welcome to Industry Insights, the EFM podcast presented by the European Film Market of the Berlinale. This season of Industry Insights, the EFM podcast, puts a spotlight on the highly topical and trend-setting industry issues, creating a compass for the forthcoming film year. The year-round podcast is produced in cooperation with the Goethe Institute and co-funded by Creative Europe Media. I'll be your host. I'm Scott Roxborough, the European Bureau Chief for The Hollywood Reporter. And today's episode is about the money. Follow the money. Now, maybe many of you have been following the strikes in the US, the Writers and Actors Guild. And one of the key issues of those strikes was creatives getting proper compensation, particularly from the streamers, for their work being exploited on these platforms globally. Now, the writers and actors did succeed in those efforts in the United States and have new deals with Netflix and the other streamers to provide more transparency on how well their content is doing and to pay them when it does really, really well. Now, what hasn't been as well covered in the media is that the same efforts are going on here in Europe with some of the same successes. But as always, in Europe, things are a bit more complicated and a bit more bureaucratic, so it's a bit more difficult to understand what's going on. So that's the purpose of this podcast. I'm talking to three experts who will give us a little bit more insight in what's happening here in Europe and how you, as a creative, can get more idea of how your work is doing internationally and to get more money back for it. So joining me today on the podcast are Fabian Massara, who's a producer and partner at Berlin's Endorphin Production, Tina Klint, who's founder and CEO of the Danish film sales group Level K, and Maria Tanyala, who's the co-founder and co-CEO of FilmChain, which is a film tech company that specializes in managing financial transactions for the entertainment industry. Thank you all for joining us. Okay, well, yeah, thank you all for joining us. As we all know, this subject is incredibly complicated when we talk about remuneration and transparency from the streamers and how the rights situations work. Incredibly complicated, but we have to get a little bit into the weeds, I think, to talk about this issue, and it's vitally important for anyone really in the industry. And Maria, because you're really the adult in the room here, I'd like you maybe, if you could, to give a bit of an outline about what the sort of legal situation is in Europe, particularly with the EU Copyright Directive, and maybe sort of just a sketch a little bit sort of the broad outlines of the topic before we start to really get down in the weeds.
Well, thank you so much, Scott. Thank you, Tina and Fabian, for joining us on this session. I am Maria Tanyala, the co-founder of FilmChain. And indeed, it's a great pleasure to speak about transparency and fair remuneration in the creative industries. This has been, of course, a topic that has been discussed for many years. So I think I was at meetings with European Union member states then that were at that time discussing how the European Copyright Directive should be shaped back in 2018. So, first of all, with us at FilmChain, we've always kind of focused on royalty payments in film and TV. So we are a collection agent, a CAM, and, we always kind of dealt with problems of delayed payments, underreported revenue that is never recouped, very manual and opaque systems. And, we put together what was called a digital CAM, a real time payments CAM. So, of course, we've always kind of been very passionate about understanding how revenues can flow in a much smoother way in the industry for independent films and TV series. And there was actually a report in 2022. It was a study on copyright and new technologies commissioned by European Commission, so published in March 2022, where they were saying that up to 30% of the revenue is lost, mismatched, or underreported. So, of course, the lack of aggregated data and mismatch revenue, it's hurting the industry hugely and the overall economy. What was fascinating to me really was last year when the SAG and WGA strikes also kicked off. And it really felt that it was a synchronicity between what happens in North America and what was happening over the past couple of years in Europe. So the asks for SAG and WGA, the ones that they were particularly focusing on today, relevant to this topic, there were minimum earnings increase, the participation in streaming revenue, because they were considering that the current business model has eroded residuals income. And the ask was, of course, around no viewership data, which meant that actors and writers don't know how valuable their work has been. And there were actually, these were the 3 points that they had major wins. So performance, as we know, with SAG had a 7% wage increase, and actors were also about to earn a success payment along with usual residual payments if the work on the streaming projects attracted a significant number of viewers. So, on the last topic, on high budget streaming productions, streaming producers are now required to disclose the total number of hours the content was streamed, both US, Canada, and abroad for each quarter. So that was, again, a huge, huge win, intended to help actors determine if they're being fairly compensated, especially relative to a show's success. And we've always, as part of what we do, we firmly, you know, stand with WGA and SAG requests, because we believe that every creator should have access to transparent performance data and then to profit participation, if any. Then the European Copyright Directive, which I know that it has been kind of very complex, and it has been discussed across the member states. At the moment, this is not legislated, so it's just a guideline. The Copyright Directive is really addressing two main points: fair remuneration and exploitation. So appropriate and proportionate remuneration, which is Article 18, and Article 19, transparency obligation. So that member states ensure that authors received at least once a year relevant information on the exploitation of their work. And it's incredible, because if you put the two together, it's just like the strikes and the European Copyright Directive are essentially asking for the same thing. Then it was this amazing article, a new report from Audiovisual Observatory that was actually just launched before Berlinale, so on the 1st of February this year, that is actually talking extensively in about 90 pages on fair remuneration for audiovisual authors and performance. And they of course kind of raised the fact that new business models and the growth of VOD services have given huge opportunities for content creators and generating more income. However, of course, the lack of transparency practices that were not like box office was treated, you know, clearly communicated, obviously kind of associated these new online exploitation models to an imbalance of bargaining power in contractual negotiations.
You're already getting into the weeds, and we need to, but I wanted to bring the others in as well to also get a perspective of how people on the ground who are in this business experience these problems of not getting fair remuneration, chasing after revenues and so forth, before we start getting into the actual details of country to country. Maybe both Fabian and Tina, maybe Tina, you first, because you, through Level K, you sell films and film rights worldwide. It's always been a challenge to find out how your film is doing, to get money back. Maybe let me know maybe a little of the horror stories that you've experienced in trying to get your fair money back, in trying to even find out what a film has done, where it's being exploited, and what revenues you're even owed. I mean, what has been your personal experience with these type of problems?
We collect data and information from the distributors, and it's always been You have to ask for the information. You have to ask for box office admissions information. There are information, for instance, a ComScore or other data available where we can find out how the film is doing in theaters. But we do need our distributors to deliver royalty reports, and we have to push for it. Of course, some distributors, it's automated and they deliver the information, but the transparency is super difficult. And it's additional work. So you have to have people sitting and collecting this data. So Maria, when you're saying all these great things about transparency and EU directive, I'm like, who are to actually do this? And because no one is getting additional payment for this. So is it us delivering on behalf of distributors to the producers? I guess the producers in the end will have to collect for, or collecting agent for the creatives. We have data from the VOD platforms. So for us as an aggregator, and that's the other side of our business, we are sales agent and we ask our distributors to report to us. We're also an aggregator. And as an aggregator, we have the data from the VOD platforms. And that's very specific and very detailed. And that data we give to either distributors or producers. And that's, now I'm talking about EST, that is electronic sell-through, that's when you buy digitally, and TVOD, transactional VOD, where you rent for 48 hours. On the SVOD side, subscription on demand, then we don't have the viewership data. And that's what is missing that could be more transparent. But otherwise, I actually think that the VOD platforms report, and they report every month. And so that data we already have, and we can share with the producers and distributors.
And Fabian, what's been your experience as a producer in particular? How much insight do you have from the streamers, from other platforms, how your content is doing, and to what degree do you get proper recompensation in your opinion? I mean, how much is it a black box? And to what degree do you actually have some sense of, or some feeling of transparency when it comes to the exploitation of your content on these various platforms?
Yeah. So first of all, hi everyone, and thanks for having me on this podcast. So every producer has their own experience, of course, and I'm just giving you some insights from my perspective. So it pretty much goes in line with what Tina said. Many distributors are really transparent on the numbers that they get from the exhibitors and streamers and, you know, TVOD and all these numbers. And are really on time at sending their reports. I just received some this week, which is for the last year, which is great. So I don't have to ask for it, but with others, I have to ask. I have really chased the numbers, but any one of those is chasing actually the numbers from SWOT. And this is, I think these are the biggest players. And that's what Tina also mentioned, is how do we get, that's a big challenge, how to get numbers that are reliable from the streamers about the success of the shows. And this is pretty much a black box, because of course they are publishing those numbers, you know, but there's no third entity who really can double check that. You know, I mean, there's some companies who try to measure web traffic and social media impacts and whatever, and trying to create some metrics around this, but it's still like very vague. So I think what the industry needs is kind of like agree on certain metrics that measure the success of a show. And this could be related, of course, on, I mean, what's open pretty much, because they have to report it to the stock markets, is how many subscribers they have. So, but that doesn't say how much did the viewers watch or complete or whatever, you know? So we can't attach the success to the subscriber numbers. This is maybe an indicator for the power of what they could share with us in terms of money. But in terms of a particular show, we really need to find these metrics. And this is what we believe, because it all trickles down into us and to the filmmakers that we work with.
Tina, yeah, you want to say?
Yeah, no, I just on the transparency as well, like, and being very practical, Maria's system gives a great overview, and Level K has also created a system where we download reports from VOD platforms and import it to a system that then allocate a film ID number and a country code and an account that holds the rights in that specific country. So the data can be giving an overview to the correct rights holder. But there are also some of the VOD platforms, every time they change a dot, then we have to program and change our codes to make sure that there's no mistakes made. But there's still some VOD platforms by big companies where they are working in Excel sheets, but without codes. So you cannot identify the content. And we are in 2024, and it's great with all these new initiatives, but we are still working with data that is, you know, that there are mistakes being made, because if a title has the same name and you don't have codes, it cannot be reported correctly. So we are sitting with VOD platforms that cannot report correctly, and then we cannot give the distributors the correct data, and they cannot give the creatives the correct data. So that's another issue. It's great that we have the initiatives and laws to help us with the transparency, but we also have to look at the being practical and saying that, but right now there's no way it can be done.
I mean, it is still, it seems to be shocking that anyone would be working with Excel sheets as a VOD platform in Europe in this day and age. But I mean, maybe they're just nostalgic. Can I ask Maria, because you were starting to go into the looking at individual countries within the EU, the thing, of course, that's always complicated about the EU is that these directives that are put forth are not direct law. They are implemented in different ways in different countries. When it comes to something like this, we're talking about a copyright exploitation probably across the entire EU. That makes things incredibly complicated. Without losing ourselves in the complexity, tell me a bit sort of how different is it between some of the countries in terms of what is possible, what rights copyright holders have? Because I know there have been initiatives in Germany, in Sweden, that seem to have gone a lot further. It seemed to have imitated what has happened with SAG and WGA in terms of the rights that the creatives are getting. But I assume there are other countries in the EU where the situation looks a lot worse. Can you give sort of an overview of like where creatives have it best, where they have the most rights in the EU and the most enforcement, and where things are still a bit lacking?
Of course, you're very right, Scott. And I think there's also a problem in itself with legislation, right? Because a lot of the times anything that will be turned into a law will not really reflect the pain points of the industry. And I will let also kind of Fabian further input on the massive change that happened in Germany with the reporting obligation to comment on that from the perspective of a producer who needs to report. But indeed, in terms of countries, we have seen France, Germany, Sweden, Denmark, Poland, and the Netherlands, particularly kind of working on both of viewership numbers, as well as increased remuneration. Of course, in Germany, you have Verdi, which is a trade union representing five sectors with 1.9 million members. So the bargaining power and remuneration agreement for performance based additional remuneration between Netflix and Verdi, for example, has existed since 2020. And when you have 1.9 million members, it is a different discussion about what you can achieve. Of course, smaller states, first of all, they probably do not have the capacity to really understand what type of infrastructure they could put in place for dissemination of such data. So first of all, to collect and then disseminate data to rights holders, to creators, but also they don't have the critical mass. And that's why legislation that is only a guidance, it will stay at that level of just being guidance. In Germany, per se, we looked at what has been legislated into the German copyright directive. It meant that proactively, all of the production houses, all of the producers need to proactively report once a year to creators, to authors. But that in itself created so many complications, because you have producers who don't know how to get that data, and then it's a huge amount of work to disseminate that data to hundreds of authors. And so I'm sure that a few companies have felt like they've been punished with such legislation. So of course, for us, we loved the opportunity to work with the German Producers Association, with the Produzentenverband, to just create an infrastructure, the dashboards for that to happen seamlessly. But I'm sure that even with the dashboards, coming back to Tina's point, producers still kind of have the obligation to pull in that data, and that data can be corrupt, can be full of mistakes, and no one really wants to get to sue anyone and to get to a court case because of this. So the actual implementation is still very challenging, although the framework is there.
Fabi, maybe you can respond to Maria's point there about the new requirements for producers to report. Can you explain that just a bit? And also, what sort of a burden is it for producers? Because when we talk about remuneration and more transparency, it usually is framed in the sense that, oh, this is going to be great for producers and copyright holders because they will get more of the money back that they deserve. But it also comes with a reporting and administrative burden. Can you talk a bit about that? What's been your experience in Germany?
Exactly. So that has been a discussion, how to handle the sheer amount of reports that you have to send out for different projects, different creators. And it's not only about the writers, because on a movie, you usually have one or two writers, and that's easy to handle to send them the emails out. And we did that in the past, because in our company, we've always been pretty transparent and we have backend deals with the writers and key creatives. But what's new in this directive is that you also have to include actors, makeup artists, you know, anybody who's creative and who normally don't have these backend deals. So you weren't obliged to be transparent towards them. They get a fair remuneration like everyone, and that's fine. So what's new is we have to report to them too. So we have literally dozens of people on each film that you need to report proactively to every year. And then you have maybe 10 films in distribution, you know, even a small company, if you shoot one or two films per year and the distribution period is 10 years or whatever, you have hundreds of people that you need to are obliged to send the reports to, and they have to be correct and all that stuff. So we're pretty horrified of having huge Excel sheets and then having huge email traffic and having people working in the office for weeks just to handle that. So we started discussing, I mean, there are different platforms who are offering this, but we started discussing with Maria's company if they could build such a platform, which merely works as a funnel. And we put in the numbers that we get. Some of them are reliable, such the box office, you know, wherever you have a standardized measurement system, and some are just intransparent, like these streamers. So, but you fill in these numbers, and you have certain rights of certain for certain projects and creators, and they get the email automatically. So we just wanted to automate it to the biggest extent. So because actually as a producer, we want to embrace the transparency. I mean, I'm talking about myself again, but I know many producers who are like that, because, and this is not about just getting all the money that we are entitled to or the creators are entitled to. That's one point. But the other point is we see it as a huge incentive to really go the extra mile for some creators, you know, to take risks, to be more excellent, you know, and thus make the products better, you know. I mean, they do anyway, I can assume that, you know, because they love our stories and everything, but it's an additional incentive to be better. And because you get then a fair transparency, maybe not more money, because as we all know, that it's a hit business, so most of the projects won't be profitable. It's the truth. But if you get a hit, at least you know where you are with the project and you learn something. And this is, and it increases the level of trust also. And I think this is the biggest gain on this. So that's our take on the whole transparency law.
I would like to just make the point of just to echo what Fabian has said. What we felt as well, it's that this increased transparency across the value chain ultimately builds trust and helps everyone make better films.
Yeah, Tina, can you maybe speak to that? You talk about the difficulty with transparency in a lot of areas and difficulty in knowing, getting numbers back and so forth. But when you do have it, when in the areas you have like your direct sell-through and your aggregation business where you get very good figures back, how is that impacting what you make and how you make it? Is there a feedback loop happening there?
On the aggregation, where it's mainly with distributors in different countries, so we report to them. And yes, they do use the data, and they do know their own market. So they do look at the data to buy new films, not necessarily going in and checking. It's probably an overview in terms of genre. and they know. So what is good to import and what works for their local audience. But that is another, with all this knowledge that we have, and I do think that the most of the business is transparent and do agree with the transparency. But then the next question is, how do they actually exploit the knowledge? Because there's so much data. So, and as a sales agent, you know, we do have the next festival coming up. We are doing strategies. And so actually looking back at all the data and having a person to exploit the knowledge, that's again, something where you have to invest. So I think we can all, there's so much information and many reports, but are we using it? I don't think the smaller companies have that capacity to have a person to sit and say, okay, listen, if we want to be big in Spain, Latin America, we're making this kind of film. I don't think that's really how it works. Fabian, you can say when you're doing a production, one thing is the local market. And then for international sales, you don't make a tailor-made production to be exported to Asia. So you have a lot of data, but how do we exploit it? And do we want to?
Can you answer that, Fabian? I mean, how do you work on that level? I assume obviously the local market is always the most important, but now you do have data coming from outside. Does that contribute, or do you want it to contribute to sort of how you end up making productions, the decisions you're making on the creative side?
No, I agree with Tina. So we cannot make a tailor-made film because it never works, you know, because it's just not working. So, but what can change is, of course, that we understand how to, or what are the particular touch points of the audience in the story that we want to tell. You know, we want to stay original, and it all starts with the story and the filmmakers, but we want to also understand how do we get the attention of the audience. I mean, we are not marketing the films ourselves, but we have to think about it, of course. And this is where the data helps, of course. And this is what it's all about. You know, I'm quoting a colleague of ours. I was on a panel on the EFM like 2 days ago, and he said it's about, what kind of cheese do you put on the vegetable so that people want to have it, you know? And this is more about that. The vegetable stays the vegetable. That's the valuable part of it. And, you know, the audience wants to be surprised and all that. So there's no tailor-made version, but still it helps us understand things and discuss with distributors also what could be done or what could be emphasized, you know, what kind of parts of the story or the theme. And this is where it's helpful.
It's interesting. I guess it shows the new vegan approach of the industry in general, that you use vegetables as a metaphor, not like a cheeseburger with the cheese on a cheeseburger. But Tina, yes, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, and I think that you can use the data and information as a, again, like a guideline. Know about the audience, what are they interested in, but also now the AVOD, advertisement funded VOD, it's established in US, but it's not established across Europe, but it's coming. And one thing that will be, and also fast channels and so on, but one important thing is that the films need to, for royalties to be interesting for the distributors. The film has to catch the audience in the beginning, because you need to go through those commercial breaks. And if you don't go through the second one, then royalties are zero or less to none. So the distributors also look at films and say, okay, if it's not capturing, if it's too slow within the first 10 minutes, then it doesn't work. So you have to also look at is it a film for theatrical release, or is it a film for TV and VOD? And this is where the price point is interesting for the producers to know that if you are a TV and VOD film outside your local country, then you do need to capture the audience. And of course, everyone wants to capture the audience, but sometimes films are also starting, it's a slow burner. It can still be a fantastic film, but then you might not get the prices that you would have gotten 20 years ago. So the VOD is changing also the films, the market, and how we look at films.
Maria, you want to jump in?
Yes, I think what's an important kind of point is to also balance the power of who has access to data, right? Because it feels like it can be one side that has all the data and may or may not utilize it, and then there are the other members of the other parties to the value chain that don't have the data, so they can't even make an informed decision about what they're going to do with it. And on that point, it can be retrospectively. So we've seen the German screenwriter Annika Decker that won a residual lawsuit to receive further payments for the blockbuster Rabbit Without Ears. And that was just a sign of a screenwriter who finally got to understand the success of the blockbuster and then accessed further remuneration. So it can be retrospectively. And of course, I completely understand the point of view that you will never necessarily base your decisions on what to produce next in a certain country. But absolutely, I think it is vital to know how to price it in case you had viewers or not. Because if you don't know when you make your next production, you have no idea about the success. You only get the price that you have been offered, and you will never know if that was fair or not.
Yeah, and we can use the data to reach our audience better. So when we're making a strategy for international sales to inform the distributors about the possibilities, we can use and exploit data to position the film better and making the right marketing material to reach the audience. Because I think that is for European films, for art house films, for smaller country productions, it's often a lack of supportive marketing material for the film to reach audience across borders. So you have your local trailer, but you might not have much more because that is coordinated with the local distributor. So to reach a wider audience, we can use data to position the film better and create better and more supportive material to reach outside home country.
Can I jump in? Because we'll go back, Maria, something you mentioned about who has the data and who has access to it. We've seen, connected back to what the strikes in the US and SAG and the WGA getting an agreement with the streamers for them to provide a certain form of transparency and to provide a key for remuneration so that they know if you make a film or a series for Netflix and it hits a certain number of completions or a certain number of views, then you get a certain kind of compensation. What's the situation here in Europe? I know that Germany and I think Sweden have done similar type agreements with Netflix, but I don't know all the details of how the remuneration works there. Who in Europe, just if we want to stay in Europe, who here has the right to demand transparency from and direct data from the streamers? And what does the remuneration packages legally look like here in Europe?
So, according to the report that was launched by the Audiovisual Observatory, so we have Denmark that has reached this type of agreement for increased remuneration. Even in Poland was a pilot project for additional remuneration, success-based rate for screenwriters, directors, cinematographers, and actors. France has also, since November 2021, has this adequate and proportionate compensation obligation. And of course, Germany. So the Netherlands also has a sort of, it's kind of going towards that direction as well, based on viewership numbers. And coming back also to Tina's point on dashboards, like as a collection agent, us too, we have dashboards of analytics and we try to support exactly with the same thing. Just so you know, right from the beginning, even from the pre-sales made, to know which territories have sold and kind of where distributions with distributors, if overages start to come in or after minimum guarantees, you get to see further royalties, to just have that data visualized very easily, very kind of easily to digest in order to make informed decision. But of course, as a collection agent, we only so much kind of rely on data that comes much, much later from distributors. And the question to me is, how can we make that even more real time?
Yeah, no, because Maria, we're trying to work together on our first film, and your dashboard is a great overview. And now I'm just thinking, like, do you, because when we collect royalty reports from distributors around the world, everyone has a different format. So it is one number that you see on the, if there's a royalties or when there is royalties. So that's one number from one country. It's impossible to import the data. That's where an aggregator, we have the data because we have it directly from the platforms, but actually collecting from each individual country so that you could see, how do you do it with the German platform? Is it the producers that are typing in information, or did you create a specific format that, no, I'm just thinking, but that exhibitors, cinemas are delivering to? Is there any way that there's a new standard coming, or?
Very good question. Is there a new standard? I mean, how is this done practically? Just building these platforms to allow, you know, how is this data being inputted? How is it being collected?
If I may answer to this, so I mean, we're in the very beginning with this platform. So our hope as producers, of course, that using, the more producers are using this platform and the industry getting used to work with this platform, the more leverage we have also to talk with the legislation or maybe the associations of the streamers and television stations to join this platform as well, and create a, let's say, a standardized reporting tool that everybody's relying to. And in the very best case, it will be a Europe-wide or worldwide platform where everybody says, okay, I put in my numbers there, and it trickles through automatically, more or less. So, of course, numbers need to be verified, and there's also different mechanics in there where you can verify them. At the moment, it's still like that. I get the report from a company. We get a report from the distributors as a PDF or whatever, and we have to... yeah, type in the numbers, and we can then attach the report as a PDF, put it in the system there. So we have kind of like a data management thing, which helps us to keep an overview on the outcome of our projects. But it's still it's not automatic. So we are the filter personally. We have to put it in. What makes it much more easier, of course, already is then the reporting to be sent out to the creators. I mean, that's a benefit right away. But yeah, it, in the end, it should give us, actually, that's the idea, some leverage to create an industry-wide standard. But we are not there yet.
Absolutely. I would add to that the level of granularity is there. So it's rights, overages, MGs, per country, per distributor. So the granularity is there. But exactly like Fabian said, at this point is manual. We would absolutely love the opportunity to do some API integrations if we are allowed to, so that we have the opportunity to automate as much as possible. And hopefully that will give, in, you know, 6 months' time, producers the bargaining power to request that, to move it from a manual phase, which is in right now, very granular data, but manual, to more automated standardization of reporting. That is the dream.
Well, can I ask, though, do we also, because also the thing that Fabian mentioned at the very beginning was a common metric, because this whole you know, film industry is based on the metric of the box office, which is a very standardized one. It's money that comes through the till and so forth. As various other forms of exploitation have come about, new metrics have been found, whether it's ratings or whatever. With streaming, I don't yet see a common metric to be used. I mean, Netflix deal with SAG and the WGA had one measurement. As far as I understand, the deals that have been made in Europe are slightly different in terms of what they say, you know, how they measure and so forth. Maybe Marie, you can explain a bit more. I mean, do we have a common metric when it comes to streaming exploitation, and don't we desperately need one? I mean, what actually should be the common metric to be measured? Because if we're all measuring different things, then the idea of fair compensation sort of goes out the window, because no one can agree on what, you know, even what we're looking at, whether and not, you know, where it how it should be divided.
Well, I think, Scott, on your point, there is, of course, there's conversation there, but every platform has a different number of subscribers, right? So then it's also the question, almost like what percentage of your subscribers have watched this, because you can't compare subscribers from a smaller content provider, a European content provider, with one of the oldest platforms on the market and their database. So it is definitely a percentage of subscribers that is I personally think that it's incredibly relevant. And then you have, for example, in Denmark, and please do correct me if I'm wrong, Tina, agreements have been reached with Netflix, but also similar agreements have been reached with TV2 and Viaplay. And, you know, Viaplay is originally Scandinavian. VOD platform with UK offices as well. So, and expanding, but they are very kind of, they have a stronghold in Nordic countries, and agreement has been reached with them too. Of course, the metrics will be different compared to the agreements with Netflix, but that doesn't mean that we should stop and stumble upon, this, kind of, well, are the metrics the same? No, they're not the same, but there is a common point there around percentage of subscribers who have viewed that content.
And going back to the strikes, you said it's interesting that these sort of things are happening simultaneously, and that the demands being made on this side of the Atlantic and in the US are very, very similar. But one thing that is very different is that the unions, at least in the entertainment industry here in Europe, are actually much weaker than they are in the US, which is an odd thing for a lot of people to understand, since unions in general are much stronger in Europe than they are in the US. But when it comes to the entertainment industry, it's the last stronghold of the dream of socialism. Can I ask, actually all of you, but do you see an impact on collective negotiating, on union strength within the industry here in Europe? Should we expect that groups like Verdi and others within the European industry will start to collectively negotiate and get better demands out of the streamers in sort of the wave of what's happened out of the United States? For any of you, maybe, you know, Fabio and Tina or Maria, who'd like to think, do you see an impact from the success of the unions in the United States? Do you see that having an impact here in Europe as well? Or is it already having?
I think it's too early to say. And for the Germany in particular, the agreements with Netflix that Verdi has negotiated with, together with the Actors Association and other association, about better remuneration and a certain extent of transparency, these happened before the strikes. So there was also already an urge like 5 years ago to start these talks. So these deals were settled I think one was settled 4 years ago or 3 years ago, and the other one 2 years ago. So I'm not sure if these strikes have a bigger effect here. Maybe they've been watched carefully because you see what they do. And if it leads to kind of a certain standard of measuring the success of certain shows, that could be adapted here. It could be an example. But to be frank, I don't see that this has a massive impact on being more coming together and being stronger and having a stronger lobby leverage here. I don't think so. I don't know. Tina, what do you think?
No, I haven't felt or heard anything where this is relevant right now. Maybe at a later stage. I think we have a lot of other topics that are more current, like just laws of local countries about what kind of content you are allowed to import. Like in Europe, like queer content are not allowed to be released in specific countries. So I think the topics are other, where we need to come together across Europe. So there's cultural differences, but also cultural traditions and local laws of European countries that are something where I don't see us coming together right now and adapting anything that just happened in the US.
I think my perspective is a bit more like looking at the energy. So I think it has impacted things and behaviors, and I think the way filmmakers, the way companies in the value chain look at engagement. We very much welcomed and appreciated, for example, the report launched by Netflix, the engagement report that was launched in December 2023. It was a report that covered 18,000 titles, representing 99% of all viewings on Netflix. So we can't say if that was a direct consequence of the strikes, but it was definitely a very interesting coincidence on timing and a very welcomed step into an intricate, complex report on shows viewed on Netflix. So this is the type of behavior that hopefully, if it won't mean any type of like European unionization per se, and that can be incredibly complex, especially there's a lot of kind of bureaucratic obstacles in that, but more of the general feel and the general behavior attitude towards reporting, towards viewership, engagement, and making informed decisions to make better films.
So more of a vibes thing, that the vibes are such that things that it's that it might have an impact over here. Well, can I ask all of you then? I mean, when it comes to, if someone is listening to this, who is a creative at one point, you know, is a writer, a director, an actor, and they're hearing this and thinking, well, I've produced stuff and I'm sure it's doing better out there and I'm not getting proper remuneration. And Maria quoted a report that said, what was around 30% of monies are, which is just crazy if you think about how narrow the margins are for independent and film. And as Fabian said, how they mostly lose money. So, I mean, any lost money is really a tragedy, if I could be dramatic about it. What would you advise creatives? What would you advise them to do? How can they get better insight into the data, and what should they do to try and get proper remuneration? What sort of practical things that a writer, director, actor can do if they think, I'm getting ripped off? what can they do? Yeah, Tina?
I would say write to Maria and Fabian.
And then I would say, make sure you get a good lawyer, because, you know, what you, in your example, it's already when they feel they're getting ripped off. I think when they're entering a new agreement for a new project, it's totally fair to ask for kind of a back-end deal, or like having transparency included in the contract. Again, I'm talking about our company here. So there might be other producers who don't want to be transparent for their own reasons, but they should ask for more transparency and have it in the contract. And they should just know and listen to these podcasts and so understand that the law, at least in Germany, is on their side, and we are obliged to report. And for producers, I mean, which I consider also being very creative, or at least they should be, and that's how we define ourselves in our company, I would say, I mean, embrace transparency for sure, because it's also like talking from the plain business side, not only building more trust and having better films and more motivated creators on your side, simply from the business side, I think it's a very good tool to manage your risk, because the more data is out there, Tina mentioned that, and I think Maria too, it gives you an idea, if you have a script on the table, of what kind of budget is the market, would the market be ready to risk to pay at the present time. It could be different 1 year ahead. You know, nobody knows what's going to happening, but if the project has a momentum right now, what would be the realistic budget to aim at? And you don't have to change the story, but maybe the way you approach it. And these kind of things help you manage risk. I'm not using the term mitigate risk. I'm hearing it at all the panels here, and risk mitigation, of course, is something that's a part of management, but you have to also take risks, because if you don't take risks, you don't get a return, you know, not only financially, but also creatively, you don't get a return. So that's why I think also this, that would be my advice to producers, like embrace the transparency and use it as a tool to manage your business.
And so on my side, I think my advice would be to don't be afraid to ask questions. Even if it feels that you're a bit more unpopular, if you do ask the questions, there's nothing wrong with it. It will just make you feel better once you receive the answers. Because I know that a lot of filmmakers, a lot of creatives, producers will understand that if it's a flop, there are so many other people who paid a lot of money to make that film, and they're losing a lot of money. And once they know that, they feel a bit more kind of comfortable with their compensation. But you can only do that once you have the information. So even if you're a bit unpopular, do ask the questions, find out what's, you know, in what position you are, and then you decide what direction you take from there.
Well, maybe then for all of you, just to wrap up, saying this, a lot of this is still quite new. A lot of the new laws that have been brought in, a lot of the new procedures, a lot of the new workflows is still very, very new. And we're just sort of figuring out how it works and how well it works and the impact it'll have. But maybe I'm going to ask all of you, how optimistic are you that this will be a positive contribution? Or do you, I'm just wondering if looking forward just a couple of years or 5 years into the future, how will the world look differently when it comes to transparency of information and compensation for creatives? Yeah, maybe Tina first. Yeah.
I think this is very positive. And I think in 5 years, we will have a much better overview of all the data. And hopefully, we will also be better in exploiting the data for reaching the audience, or like we spoke about earlier, positioning the films or using the overview of the data. So I think it's a very positive initiative. I also know that that's a lot of work. There's a lot of data and there's a lot of work and there are many APIs to be done, Maria. It's very positive.
I totally agree with Tina. So it's not sure that there will be more money in the market and all that. Nobody can say that, but at least it increases, you know, what Maria said, that in this survey, they find out that 30% of the money is lost, or it's just not there. But the damage is much bigger than the 30% because it destroys the trust. And just to overcome that, I also think it's a very good initiative, and there will be more steps we need to take, especially to the other end, to regulate how the data comes into the funnel. But it's a good start, and because it all starts with the creators, and they need to have, you know, they need to know where the money or the success is going. And I also think in 5 years or a couple of years we'll be at a much better position.
And my conclusion, I can only just go back to box office numbers. So what we have seen, you know, we have seen a strong industry knowing box office numbers right at the top, and that's influencing the life of theatrical releases. It didn't make them more successful, but it just simply informs the people working with box office numbers. So I think the same type of access to data and reports should be across the entire value chain and across all rights. It's only like this that creators and stakeholders in the value chain can feel empowered if they have the same access to money reports and data, like we know at the end of each week how the box office performed.
Yeah, that's the dream, and hopefully not too far away a future. Well, thank you all for joining me. Fabian Masaya, Tina Klint, and Maria Tanyala. Thank you all. And for everyone listening, enjoy the rest of the market, and we'll see you at the next one.
Thank you very much. Really great talking to you guys.
Thank you.
Well, thank you all for joining us, and thanks to all of you listening. This season of Industry Insights is produced in cooperation with the Goethe Institute and co-funded by Creative Europe Media. And this episode has been presented in collaboration with my bosses at The Hollywood Reporter. Please do tune in to future episodes of Industry Insights. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts and on the website of the European Film Market, which is www.efm-berlinale.de. Thanks for tuning in.